Hello, and welcome to the Lying Media Bastards radio show.
I don't have to tell you things are bad. Everybody knows things are bad. It's a depression. Everybody's out of work or scared of losing their job. We know the air is unfit to breathe and our food is unfit to eat. We sit watching our TVs while some local newscaster tells us that today we had 15 homicides and 63 violent crimes, as if that's the way it's supposed to be. We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, so we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radios, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to ride. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value. I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore!
Soñé otro mundo tan lejos y tan cerca. Soñé otro viaje, cuatro caminos, cinco destinos. Soñé la risa, soñé la ilusión. Soñé otro mundo, soñé menos joda. Soñé una mañana que en fin se podía. Soñé de un amor de noche y de día. Soñé la fortuna, soñé la alegría. Soñé de la luna que no se rendía. Y que a mi gato le decía,
calavera no llora, serenata de amor. Calavera no llora, no tiene corazón.
Soñé sin guerra, soñé sin temores. Soñé sin vallas, soñé sin paliza. Soñé una faena que nunca se acaba. Soñé una verbena que siempre otra vez.
Calavera no llora, serenata de amor. Calavera no llora,
soñé al trabajar, soñé hasta enfermar, tan lejos y tan cerca, pacífico, soñé tus olas, tan lejos y tan cerca, siempre toca llegar,
calavera no llora, serenata,
siempre toca llegar. Soñé otro mundo, soñé conseguirlo, lo conseguí soñando, soñé al despertar, tan lejos y tan cerca, tan lejos y tan cerca, siempre toca llegar,
calavera no llora,
siempre toca llegar,
calavera no llora.
Hey folks, this is Jake. Welcome to the Lying Media Bastards radio show. Thanks for listening. That just there was Manu Chao doing a song, what's it called? Otro Mundo, which means another world in Spanish. Manu Chao does a lot of politically themed music. Should probably play, he has another song on his new, well, I think it's the newest album, La Radio Linda. La Radio Lina. A song called Politic Kills, where he actually sings in English, which was kind of interesting. Anyhow, so this is going to be a stripped-down sort of show. I want to keep doing these radio programs, but it just seems to take so long for me to actually get a show done, and I just don't have much time these days, when it suddenly struck me that if I don't bother putting in all the music, especially the background music, which I love, suddenly this show, putting it together, takes a lot less time. So sadly, I think I'm going to have to go with that, even though the background music, I think, makes a much better atmosphere and makes it all sound cool and keeps everyone sucked in and is aesthetically pleasing and blah, blah, blah. We got to do what we got to do. And I think what we got to do is not have the music. So, Iraq War, this coming Wednesday, I believe 5th anniversary of the invasion of Iraq. Depending on who you talk to, a million dead Iraqis, or only hundreds of thousands, it is rather tragic and farcical that that is a debate. We have debates among war supporters and opponents about whether it was, 200,000 innocent Iraqis killed or a million. Granted, 800,000 dead Iraqis, that's a big deal, but the 200,000 is such an awful number that we ought to just stop there and go, oh, fuck, this was a terrible thing. But what you gonna do? So you got the perhaps a million dead Iraqis. Last number I saw is that 4.5 million displaced Iraqis. I think they're saying about 2.5 million have fled to Syria and Jordan, and another 2 million are still living in Iraq somewhere, in refugee camps, living with relatives, maybe they've fled Baghdad, and they're too scared to come home because, you know, things are so scary, violent, awful. But a lot of them are running out of money and might end up coming back to their homes in the near future. I think we're at almost 4,000 dead U.S. soldiers. I've never seen an actual figure for how many military contractors have been killed. I think about a year ago I heard there was about 500. I'm sure that's higher by now. There's, let's see. Between 30 and 50,000 wounded. Again, it's a hard number to come across because apparently the U.S. military keeps separate figures. One figure for the people who are wounded in combat and another set of figures for people who are wounded in other circumstances. And they have some ridiculous rules. I think it's like if you are riding as part of a caravan in Iraq, you know, you're driving military equipment somewhere, and the first truck in the caravan is attacked by, you know, a rocket, and your truck crashes because you're trying to dodge it or something like that, your wounds are not combat-related. That's something else. That's not in the line of duty or something crazy. So hard to say how many troops wounded. Last figure I heard, too, was that 300,000 soldiers, nearly 300,000, had applied for disability. And I think, all told, I've read that there's about 1.4 million Americans who have served at some point in Iraq. So, $3 trillion is the cost of the war, they're saying, after you factored in the... And that's a conservative estimate by Joseph Stiglitz and another author. He won a Nobel Prize for economics or something a while back. But after you've factored in the interest costs of the war, $3 trillion. And that's their conservative estimate of the cost. I mean, that's one of the reasons why the war can keep on going, is that Americans haven't felt the financial crunch because we've been borrowing all the money. All of the money that's going to pay for the war is borrowed. So the same way that you could, be buying yourself fancy cars, jewelry, and electronics, if you put it all on your credit card and not feel the pinch from your paychecks and money running out, that's because it's on credit. So we will feel this. We will feel it badly. We're going to see waves of veterans of these wars coming back. They're going to be homeless. You're going to see signs, you know, like when I was growing up, you'd sometimes see homeless people with signs, you know, Vietnam vet, please help. Now we're going to see homeless folks with Iraq War veteran, Afghanistan War veteran, please help. And they're going to be homeless. There's going to be a lot of mental illness, families broken apart. The mental illness is particularly scary because, and not just mental illness, but brain trauma. Due to the advances in technology, many fewer soldiers are being killed in the Iraq War, but a lot of them are coming back wounded, either, you know, missing arms and legs, or some of them with severe neurological trauma. You know, you're in a vehicle, and one of these IEDs goes off, and you don't die because you got your bulletproof vest and your helmet and all, but your brain's been rattled around in your skull because you just sat through a huge explosion, and that happens time upon time. No one knows what's going to happen with that. All the journalists that I know and respect that are in Iraq say right now that Iraq as a country doesn't really exist anymore. It's a series of neighborhoods and regions and provinces which are controlled by various factions and warlords. The Iraqi government is a fiction and always has been. The only reason that they're still alive is because the U.S. Troops are there to protect them. And they meet in the green zone, you know, walled off from the rest of Iraqi society. Such a sad story. And the American people seem to have decided we're just going to wait this one out. We're going to wait till we elect the next person in, and the next person will take care of it, just like we did in 2006 when we voted for the Democratic Congress. We thought that would get us out of the war. No, not so much. And I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it would take to actually get this war done. I think a lot of Americans feel that we should get out, but are afraid to leave the Iraqi people at the mercy of the warlords and insurgents and militias. I don't think there's a choice. I don't think the United States can fix this. I think, and on top of that, we make it worse. We are a target. People come after American troops, or often have, and people get killed in the crossfire. Right now, there's a lull because the Shia successfully ethnically cleansed Baghdad, so they don't need to be going around killing Sunni anymore. Well, the same thing with the Sunni. Whenever there was a neighborhood in Baghdad that was a majority one or the other, they would try to get rid of the people of the other ethnicity, the other sect. So you're in a 60% Sunni neighborhood, the Sunnis try to kick out or murder the other 40%, the Shia, and vice versa. The Shia would try to kick out and murder the Sunni. And I believe I read that prior to the Iraq War, Baghdad was 55% Shia. Now it's 75%. So that's pretty much done. But the Sunni are, they're not going to give up on Baghdad. So everything I read, all the analysts and journalists are saying there's going to be a flare up. There's going to be a reignition of the civil war because the Sunni are going to want to come back after Baghdad. And right now, one of the reasons they stopped coming after the Shia and the Americans is they decided to take on Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda in Iraq was trying to foment and fan the flames of fighting with the Shia and with the Americans. And the Sunnis said, we can't take on everybody, so we'll take out Al-Qaeda. These guys are making trouble for us. We'll stop them first. And then the Americans started paying them. I believe the number is Americans will pay the Sunni insurgents to fight against Al-Qaeda and not fight Americans, $300 a month, I think it is. Maybe $300 a week? Maybe a month. And I've heard tens of thousands, maybe 100,000 Sunni insurgents are now on the side of the Americans as long as the checks keep coming and as long as the weapons keep coming. And at a certain point, they'll have as much money, weapons, and time to organize as they need to start their counteroffensive against the Americans and or the Shia, and that's going to go badly. Nothing more I can say. That is a bad situation. And now, music. Hey. Nice way to break up all that awfulness. Here's a song by Santo Gold, who I know very little about, electronic hip-hop sort of artist out of Brooklyn, I believe, out of New York. I keep hearing her compared to M.I.A. meets Nelly Furtado, which actually kind of fits. But I'll play that one, this song called Creator, and I think you'll like it. And yeah.
Good. Jones, ODK was DOA, yeah, I know what you here for now. Was I young, I did hold out. Now don't you crush on me, I see you in your five dreams. Whether or not you know it's true, yo, who they think they do. That shit must hurt real bad, picking what you wish you had.
Okay, so that was Creator by Santo Gold. Good stuff. I started watching a documentary this week called The Power of Nightmares. It was a three-part BBC series, which they have not yet managed to find any sort of distribution in the United States, which is highly telling and terrible because it is so informative. I'm told that the third part is a little bit weaker than the first two, and that in some ways it sort of tries to argue that somehow the neoconservatives actually created terrorism and Al-Qaeda in its modern form, and that terrorism really kind of doesn't... It sounds like it really downplays the threat of terrorism, which to a large extent is true, but again, I have not seen the third part, so I can't comment. But this film, it goes back into, I think actually even into the 1940s, late 1940s, to show the rise of Islamicism, the radical Islamic fundamentalist militant philosophy. Goes back to 1949 to start showing that, and then goes into the 50s to show the birth of neoconservatism, and shows the history as they both go through the ages and the ways in which they often influence each other and are interconnected in some ways. And it's really powerful, and you know, a lot of us had, I'd never heard a lot of this before. You know, when did, you know, fundamentalist Islam get started? When did this you know, when did it get started? How? Well, what's the history of that movement? And same thing with neoconservatism. We all hear about, well, those of us who are, you know, politically obsessed hear about, you know, Richard Perl and Wolfowitz and Rumsfeld, and maybe hear about the Crystals. And we've probably heard the name Leo Strauss tossed around. And, so this really lays out what are the birth of these two movements. And the birth is very similar. Again, this is a documentary in which one person puts this story together, so it could be this person has their own spin, and that these are not entirely accurate depictions, but it's very telling and powerful. So I'm going to go ahead. Unfortunately, like, as I said, the film has not been distributed in the United States. A friend of mine got me a copy of this. It aired back in 2004. And actually, KPFK, the radio station, they recently were giving this. Somehow they made a deal with the BBC, and they were giving this away as a premium. If you donated money to their nonprofit station, they would send you a copy. So I managed to get a copy through channels. But I'll just give you the beginning here. I have a transcript. I don't. I could probably get piece together audio of it, but as I said, stretched for time these days. So, the film cites the beginning of the radical Islamic movement with a man named Sayed Qutb, who was an Egyptian school inspector who went and visited Colorado in 1949 to study the U.S. school system. To possibly bring back some of that to Egypt, to that society. I have a part of a transcript here. I'll probably post links to the transcripts on my site. But let me find a bit here. Let's see. Out of his experiences of America that summer, Qutb was going to develop a powerful set of ideas that would directly inspire those who flew the planes on the attack of September the 11th. As he had traveled across the country, Qutb had become increasingly disenchanted with America. The very things that, on the surface, made the country look prosperous and happy, Qutb saw as signs of an inner corruption and decay. Qutb saw Americans believing that they were free, but in reality they were trapped by their own selfish and greedy desires. American society was not going forwards, it was taking people backwards. They were becoming isolated beings driven by primitive animal forces. Such creatures, Qutb believed, could corrode the very bonds that held society together. He became determined that night to prevent this culture of selfish individualism taking over his own country. So the film talks about Qutb and how he comes back from the U.S. to Egypt. He becomes a member of the Muslim Brotherhood, which was a fairly radical political movement at the time. How they were all arrested after some of their actions. And he was eventually executed, but how his philosophy directly influenced Zarawiri, I'm always going to pronounce that name wrong, from Al-Qaeda, who then he's the number two guy in Al-Qaeda at this point in time, you know, in modern times, and he actually recruits Bin Laden. So we see a few step link between. This Egyptian fellow who thinks that the individualism of the United States is selfish and destructive and wanting to protect his people from that, and Al-Qaeda and the Islamist movement today. Now, they talk about, in this documentary, then they talk about Leo Strauss. Now, in some ways, the origins of Strauss's philosophy really kind of mirror Qutb here. Leo Strauss, he was an obscure political philosopher at the University of Chicago in the 1950s. Strauss believed that the liberal idea of individual freedom led people to question everything, all values, all moral truths. Instead, people were led by their own selfish desires, and this threatened to tear apart the shared values which held society together. But there was a way to stop this, Strauss believed. It was for politicians to assert powerful and inspiring myths that everyone could believe in. They might not be true, but they were necessary illusions. One of these was religion, the other was the myth of the nation. And in America, that was the idea that the country had a unique destiny to battle the forces of evil throughout the world. Strauss, his ideas then influence Irving Kristol, who was a politician, journalist, Beltway insider sort of guy. His son, William Kristol, is the popular neoconservative who helped push for the Iraq War. You see him on Fox News and CNN, and now he has a column. After being so wrong about everything about Iraq, he now has a column with the New York Times. And I'm told that his most recent column, he says that John McCain should pick Clarence Thomas to be his running mate. No comment. So Irving Kristol gets his ideas from Leo Strauss that individualism is a threat and it can destroy society, so they have to unify the people by making shit up through creating these powerful myths of religion, which we see a lot of these days, and of the United States' amazing destiny that we are good fighting the forces of evil. And Crystal ends up gathering this group around him that includes, Donald Rumsfeld, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, and many, many of these folks. So the film sort of takes you through that history, but Jesus, I did not know that the neoconservatives were so batshit crazy. I mean, the documentary sort of says that, where they started, they believed that individualism is selfish and dangerous. They are against freedom. Do you folks understand? Neoconservatives think that freedom is bad and dangerous. Because of this, they try to get Americans to believe that they're better than other people and must fight evil, and that will unite them and get them to ignore all these ideas of individualism, their individual freedoms. And according to the film, they started to believe their own hype after creating this myth about America fighting for freedom and goodness in the world, that they started to believe it. And now truly, this is what they want to do. They want to use American military and economic might and lies to try to spread their idea of democracy, which somehow is thing. I don't see how they can believe in democracy and not believe in freedom. But and this should be like a big disclaimer on everything. William Crystal, like I said, he has a column in the New York Times. He part of his basic political philosophy is that you have to create fake stories, fake myths, fake metaphors to gather the people together so that the society will stay unified. He's a newspaper columnist whose basic political philosophy is you must lie to people. How does this guy get into the newspaper? It's madness. So, but yeah, as I said, powerful movie. Go see it. The Power of Nightmares. I'm about halfway through, as I said. If it starts to get bad, I will tell you in my upcoming part of my site or in a upcoming show on how and why it is bad. So let's get some more music. This here is, what did I already play already? Actually, never mind. I'll just keep talking and then I'll play one song at the end. Two books I want to promote. DMZ. I don't know if I've talked about it on the show or not. It is a comic book, graphic novel by Brian Wood and a fellow whose name I forget, who's a pretty powerful artist. It is the story of a civil war in modern-day America, centered in Manhattan. Manhattan is the disputed zone, the demilitarized zone, the DMZ, hence the name of the comic. And as I've, I don't know if I said it on the show or just thought it, but since we don't see stories about war, since America, we never really see war on our soil, on our own home turf. We never see footage of war in other countries or of what our military forces do in other countries. This is the best that we can get. We can get a fictional story showing us what war would look like in American context to get us to understand what people in other countries might be going through. So that is it's some pretty powerful stuff. And just recently they came out with the latest collection of comics. About every 4, 6, 10 issues, they put together they call it a graphic novel. It's a collection of all those issues. And so instead of having to track down each one individually, you get a bunch of them at once. Usually with a broad story arc. So I'd recommend picking that up. That just came out. Also just out is our friend Amanda Marcotte, who runs the feminist blog Pandagon, pandagon.net. She has a book out now called It's a Jungle Out There, The Feminist Survival Guide to Politically Inhospitable Environments. She just put it out. It's now for sale on Amazon. If you go buy it, the Amazon rank will go up, and that happens. You get more buzz for your book, more publicity, and then more sales, etc. So if you go buy it, then Amanda will become rich and powerful, and she'll buy you a pony. Some of you may remember I interviewed her on the show some years back. She was also she got a job working for the Edwards presidential campaign for like a day. And then she was attacked by some fundamentalist Christian group who was trying to claim that she was just like this horrible anti-Catholic bigot. And they basically ran her out of the campaign. So she was a casualty of Catholic intolerance claiming that she was intolerant, which is funny and a lie. And then I guess the last bit I want to say is that I got in a new column by Naomi Klein where she was talking about Barack Obama and the political election, presidential election, and in which she said that being called a Muslim is not a smear, which is a good point. We keep hearing in the news about the Muslim smear against Barack Obama, that all these conservatives and Republicans and sleazy racist pieces of shit are keep trying to imply that Barack Obama is a Muslim, he's a terrorist, he's a terrorist sympathizer, he's a Muslim sympathizer, whatever. True, it doesn't help that his middle name is Hussein, which was the last name of the Iraqi dictator, but a lot of that gets lost. I mean, obviously we know what the media means when they say the Muslim smear, but Naomi Klein just kind of broke it down to say, no, there's nothing wrong with being a Muslim, it's just that Americans are so ignorant and racist that it seems like a smear. It would be like being in Germany, the Jew smear, if you were in World War II Germany. Nothing wrong with being a Jew, but you know that there's so much anti-Semitism at the time that that's a dangerous thing that will have negative consequences. Calling Barack Obama a Muslim or implying that he's a Muslim, well, obviously the consequences are far less bad for for Barack Obama being painted with the Muslim brush here in the United States. It was much more... I guess I made it a hyperbole. I apologize. That was too strong a metaphor, putting in the Jews in World War II Germany. But I think you get what I'm saying, that people keep acting as though smear is the correct word, and it's not that there's a smear, it's that Americans already believe in a smear, that Muslims are somehow violent, dangerous, terrible, awful people. Americans, there is a general tendency for Americans to believe that, or fear that, at least. And so the smear is not that Obama is a Muslim, it's that the entire religion of Islam and the entire ethnicity of Arabs and Persians and South Asians and, obviously many people of many different races are Muslim, but in the United States, the religion and the Arab and Persian ethnicities have been seen as such a negative light and are so feared that even implying that a political candidate is a part of that group can possibly hurt their election chances, but it shouldn't. It's just a stupid American beliefs and ignorance and all that. So, just thought that was worth mentioning. Anyhow, we're going to go out with another song. This is going to be DJ Doc Rock. This is... I see a number of these get put out per year. These sort of virtual albums that some DJ will put together that's a mashup. As you'll remember, probably one of the first ones was the DJ Danger Mouse doing the Grey Album that mixed up the Beatles' White Album and Jay-Z's Black Album. Now we have DJ Doc Rock has an album that he put out called The Biggie Hendrix Experience, which mixes the music of Jimi Hendrix and the music of Notorious B.I.G. So this one here, where's the one that I like? I'm going to play a short one. This is going to be... a lot of the songs on this virtual album are very good, but Biggie Smalls, being a gangster rapper, often the songs are sexist in some way, so I have some trouble with it. So I'm going to play this one. It's a short one called... It's a mashup of Things Done Changed and If Six Was Nine, which, to the best of my knowledge, is less sexist than the other choices. But this is going to be it. I'm Jake. Thanks for listening to the show. I'm out. And hopefully I'll get you another show in the near future. Oh, I should also mention I'm looking to be part of a project called the Neighborhood Public Radio in the April and May months. I'll get to give you details on that. I believe they got a website, neighborhoodpublicradio.org, if you want to look into that.
White collar conservative flashing down the street, pointing their plastic finger at me. They'll pursue my kind of drop and die, but I'm gonna wear my freak flag.
Remember back in the the days when niggas had waves. Gazelle shades and corn braids, pitcher pennies. Honeys had the high top jelly, see skelly. Motherfuckers was all friendly, lounging at the barbecues, drinking brews with the neighborhood crews, hanging on the avenues. Turn the pages to 1993. Niggas is getting smoked, G. Believe me. Talk slick, you get your neck slick quick. Cause real street niggas ain't having that shit. Totin' text for wreck, smoking blunts in the project hallway. Shooting dice all day, waiting for niggas to step up on some fighting shit. We get hype and shit and start lighting shit. So step away with your fist fight ways, motherfucker. This ain't back in the day, but you don't hear me though.
Let it be.